Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Season 6, what was it, Dave? Episode 93?
That would be correct, sir.
Man, I got to tell you, Dave, what has happened this week and over the last, since we got together, it's really been for almost 2 weeks now since you and I have spoken, it really surprising to me. And I want to start with the tackle situation because I'm confused, and maybe you can straighten me out, because the Steelers ended up signing Ryan Harris, who should be described as nothing more than a journeyman type of tackle, and the dollars that he got from the Steelers, 2 years, $3.9 million, tell you exactly that, that he's not a guy in high demand. But at the same time, they apparently put a contract offer on the table for Russell Okung, and seeing the money that he is now getting from the Broncos, you had to assume that the Steelers were offering something in the neighborhood of $7, $8, $9 million a year. And you go to Ali Villanueva and you go to Kelvin Beachum and you've got all of these things going on. Maybe you can straighten me out.
Well, first and foremost, I was shocked to hear the quote unquote report. And I think it's really only been one report, David, stating that the Steelers made Russell Okung an offer. With that said, you know, the guy's representing himself this go around. He's coming off of a shoulder injury. You know, maybe the Steelers were trying to use him a little bit as leverage with negotiations with Kelvin Beachum, who we know for a fact they've had ongoing discussions with. I don't find it likely that if they did make an offer to Russell Okung, it would have been of anything of serious value whatsoever. In other words, you're just going to take a swing that this guy is kind of desperate to sign a deal, and you throw one out there well below his market value. You could offer him $2 million a season, and you still technically made him an offer, even though, you know, it was a joke.
But they probably wouldn't insult him like that, right?
I wouldn't think so, but once again, we're only really talking about one report, I think, out there that they made him an offer. So, you know, and wasn't that Jeremy Fowler that did it?
Yeah, I'll have to double check. I don't remember, but I mean,
this is what I'm looking at right now from the report last week. Russell Okung has an offer on the table from Steelers. Team still meeting with offensive tackles the next few days. Kelvin Beachum still unsigned. That was the only report out there that I know of that the Steelers made an offer to Russell Okung. So take that for what it's worth. And you know, we don't know who was using who for leverage in this situation as well too. You know, so yeah, I'm filing this in. This was a negotiation tactic useful for both the Steelers and Russell Okung here.
All right, fair enough. What kind of player did the Steelers get in Ryan Harris?
They got about, as you mentioned, when you opened the show, you got a kind of a journeyman guy who can play on both sides of the line, left and right tackle, a swing tackle. He that is what he is, and that's probably what he should be. But I mean, let's not run away from the fact that people say, oh, well, they signed this guy and they signed that guy. They can't win with him. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the Denver Broncos win the Super Bowl this year?
No, I've got no worries about that.
And they did so with Ryan Harris at left tackle. So there you go.
Who's going to be the starting left tackle opening game of the season?
I will be shocked if it's not Alejandro Villanueva. I will be absolutely shocked. Now, A, it's good that they bring in a guy like Ryan Harris who can push a guy like Villanueva. But, you know, right now, I'll put it to you this way. I think it's Villanueva's job to lose.
I completely agree. Let me ask you this. Will you be equally shocked if Mike Adams is on the roster?
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Yeah,
I mean, because look at all that's transpired here in just a matter of, let's say, about 2.5, 3 weeks. The Steelers, you know, met with Taylor Decker at the Combine, you know, one of the top tackles in the class this year out of Ohio State. They proceeded to, you know, make a serious, you know, run at re-signing Kelvin Beachum. When it didn't look like that was going to work out, they brought in, as we talked about, Russell Okung. They brought in Ryan Harris. There was a report that they were thinking about bringing in the San Diego Chargers free agent tackle who has recently re-signed with San Diego. And, you know, you just look at the broad scope of things. How many times have we seen this team keep 4 true tackles over the years?
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, look, we almost know who the offensive line, who they're going to be right now, because, you know, Cody Wallace is going to be on. You got the 5 starters. You know, got Ryan Harris and Cody Wallace. That's your game day 7. If you've got 7, Chris Hubbard's going to make this team. He's 8, and that's not, you know, not considering B.J. Finney or anybody else they bring into camp.
Well, let's run down the names again. You got Alejandro Villanueva. You have
five starters.
Right. Okay. And then you have Cody Wallace. That's 6.
Ryan Harris.
You have Ryan Harris. That's 7.
Chris Hubbard making the team.
I'm not going to write that in pen yet. I like his chances, but I'm not going to write that in pen just yet.
And then you got
because
anybody else.
Here's the thing about Hubbard. What is he? Is he a tackle? Is he a guard?
I think he's a guard.
That's ugly if it's a guard, and it's equally not as pretty if it's tackle. To be quite honest with you, Cody, do you really want in the middle of a game if something was to happen to Foster or to DeCastro for Cody Wallace to be your guard? I don't. So, you know, I think the hope is that if they don't draft anybody, and why would they at this point, talking about guard, then I think you're going to have a battle between Hubbard and B.J. Finney. And, boy, they sure did pay B.J. Finney a lot of money on that practice squad last year to keep him in Pittsburgh. So I'm not willing to say Hubbard's got that spot just yet. I think a guy like B.J. Finney can certainly compete for it. But, yeah, other than that, yes, the line's set.
Yeah.
How surprised would you be? Because, look, they're supposed to be bringing in – they're supposed to be bringing in that LSU tackle for a pre-draft visit here next month.
If the Steelers go offensive line in the first 4 rounds now, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, that should be the reaction, absolutely. But what do you – okay, let me throw this at you. What if they're board stacked with about 5 names that they think they're going to have a legitimate shot at there in the first round, and 4 of them are off the board, and the 5th one's Josh Garnett?
I'll still be shocked. I mean, you know, I like Garnett. Everybody likes Garnett. But, you know, I'm not convinced he'll go in the top 40 picks. You might roll the dice, but look, you draft your board. So if that's the way it is and that's the way it goes, I guess you take them. But I would be, you know, awfully surprised.
Hey, and here's a good thing, and you just said it, and I think it's important to keep reminding us this throughout the rest of the offseason here prior to the draft. Like it or not, need or not, or what have you, if the Steelers think they can get a best – you know, a best available player. Now, obviously, we're going to rule out a few positions like quarterback, you know, maybe tight end at this point. But if they can get a high-ranked, you know, guy with great character at pretty much any position, you know, in the first couple rounds, they're going to go that way. You know, now, would it be surprising if they go tackle or guard in the first two rounds? Absolutely, especially based on needs. But I don't think, and you know, a good you know, way to look at this is, boy, look at all the attention that they gave Andrew Billings this past week at the Baylor Pro Day. I mean, a few days ago, you know, Alex Kozora is the only person talking about Billings possibly being the Steelers' first round selection because of how they used the nose tackle in the past and all like that. Well, a lot of us have been discounting it, thinking that Steve McClendon was going to be resigned, yada, yada. But I think it's apparent that even, you know, even if a guy like Billings isn't a guy that you can get on the field 50% of the snaps, I don't think they're afraid of taking a guy like him in the first round, you know, because of the talent there. And I think that's something that we got to keep reminding ourselves of the rest of this offseason. But back to the point of the offensive lineman. Yes, I think it would surprise a lot of people if one's taken in those first four picks.
All right, so let's talk about what they don't have now, and obviously we're gonna go right there, because we talked for years now about the secondary cornerback and safety being priorities in this draft, but inside linebacker is going to be a priority, and I mean the defensive line now is the cupboard is bare. You got two really good players starting. You don't have a nose tackle. Whatever people want to say about Daniel McCullers, go ahead. I'm not buying it. And you don't have any depth. So, you know, just like what you talked about, the kid from Baylor, if they go D-line in the first round, nobody's going to be surprised now.
No, absolutely not. Especially when all we've heard, since the offseason, too, is Kevin Colbert talking about how great of a defensive line class this is, you know. And I think this year you can get guys in the third round that probably in previous years may have gone in the first round. But, boy, if that was a smokescreen this past week in Baylor, it sure was a perfectly well-orchestrated one. They had seven or eight people there talking about the Steelers. Tomlin, they had Kevin Colbert. Mean Joe Green made an appearance there, even dined with Andrew Billings the night before. Where there's smoke, there's usually fire. And, boy, you could see that thing on the Internet from where I am right now. And you have to really consider Andrew Billings as possibly being the team's first-round selection at this point. And let me say this, too. I thought it just goes to show you, David, as much as you and I both follow this team and like to think that we know exactly what this team is doing, there's been a lot of surprises so far this offseason. I thought for sure either or Beecham or McClendon would have been re-signed. I thought, you know, I was fairly confident. I was surprised by a guy like Ladarius Green, his signing, because of the type of tight end he is. Not necessarily that he plays tight end, but just the kind of type tight end he is. And, you know, Ryan Harris, who saw that one coming? Certainly not me. And then you go ahead and look at them letting, you know, part-time bit role players who probably could have been re-signed on the very cheap just walk away in Antoine Blake, Sean Spence, and Terrence Garvin.
Yeah, I think all of that's interesting. And it goes to the question here. I mean, let's start with McClendon. I don't know that Steve McClendon didn't take what he thought was a better opportunity to play here, because the money McClendon got, $4 million guaranteed, you know, whatever you want to call it, $12 million over 3 years, but that's money the Steelers could have matched. And I would have assumed that the Steelers did offer something in that range. I don't know this, but I'm guessing Steve McClendon left. And, you know, we don't see a lot of guys leave the Steelers if the money's comparable. But we go back to, you know, we should not call the Steelers base defense their base defense anymore. The nickel is the base defense. And when they play with three down linemen, that's, you know, that's 25%, 30% of the time. So I'd be curious to have a truth test on Steve McClendon and say, you know, did he go, you know, they lost, the Jets lost their nose. And is he going to go play inside there and get to play 50, 60% of the time? and take a different option, because the money on none of these guys was enough to say, oh, well, of course the Steelers wouldn't match that money. Now, maybe you don't want to pay Sean Spence $2.5 million. I don't know. Does $1 million make that much difference? Sean Spence, you'd say, okay, he's worth $1.5 million, maybe $2 million. So are you gonna nitpick for $500,000 or $1 million? I don't have the perfect answer there, but every one of the guys who left, the Steelers could have paid him.
I had way back in January, I did a post on the market value. What I saw, the market value for McClendon with the Steelers, and I determined it to be $3.25 million a year on a three-year deal. So that's what I thought his market value was to the Steelers. Now, obviously, if McClendon would have been offered $3.25 million a season from the Steelers over 3 years, do you think he would have taken that? Do you think the extra $750,000, which I don't think he's guaranteed to earn $4 million a season, I think he has the opportunity. I haven't seen the details of that.
Well, the only thing I heard is there's $4 million guaranteed in the contract. So I'm assuming that's a $2.5 million signing bonus and something like $1.5 million first-year salary, and then go from there.
Right. And he could have got, the way I had drawn it out.
The answer is yes. For $750,000 for you and me, if somebody's offering you, a three-year kind of $10, $12 million deal, does that make a difference? Yeah, it does make a difference. If it's a Ben Roethlisberger contract, $750,000 is, it's a decimal point, it's a rounding error. But for Steve McClendon, yeah, maybe that matters. Yeah, sure.
And in my example, not that it amounts to a whole hill of beans. I devised a contract where he would receive $3.25 million at signing in the first year of the deal. So here's the thing: he's 30 years old, right? And the Steelers just haven't used him a lot. So outside of the base defense. So when you're talking about a guy with that age, with that amount of playing time, perceived playing time that you can play him, and while great against the run, not as good as a pass rusher, I'm willing to bet the Steelers offered him a lot less than my estimated value of 3.25. They were probably around $2 million a season on a three-year deal, and that just wasn't going to fly. And you can't blame him for taking more money in New York, and on top of that, he's probably going to play somewhere around 45 to 50% of the snaps with New York as well.
Okay, so McClendon's gone, and he was, one of my three guys that I prioritized on the offseason, even ahead of Ramon Foster. So that was the flip. They get Foster, they don't get McClendon. The rest of the guys, I just found it amusing that as much as Mike played Antoine Blake and talked about Antoine Blake, it doesn't look like they made any effort to re-sign him. Spence, we kind of understand the situation there, probably a better opportunity. Dick LeBeau knows him. That kind of makes some sense. Garvin, I haven't seen the numbers on him yet. I'd be surprised if he got more than $1 million. So he goes. And who am I forgetting?
Let's see, Beecham.
So let's talk about the other guys on the defensive side first. Are you surprised? I guess you're probably a little surprised about Blake that they didn't give him something.
Well, I mean, we don't know that they didn't.
Right.
What's going to be interesting is it's a one-year deal with the Titans. How much was that one-year deal for? Let me ask you this. What is the appropriate market value of Blake and Garvin?
I assume Blake's $1.5 million and Garvin's $1 million. I mean, I can't imagine they're much more than that.
I say they're under both of those. Yeah. There's no. I saw both of those guys returning to the Steelers on one-year minimum deals.
Yeah. Okay. So okay, I Blake was a starter last year, so I'd assume he'd get a little bit more. But I don't have any problem with that assessment. Who did Garvin sign with? Did he sign with the Titans too? I can't remember.
Washington.
Washington, right. Okay, so Spence goes to the Titans. Garvin goes.
Blake goes to the Titans.
Blake goes to the Titans, and Garvin goes to Washington, and McClendon goes to the Jets. You know, all replaceable. They're not big losses, but they're guys who were functional with the Steelers. And now, you know what this does is, you know, depending on how you want to look at all the linebackers, I mean, I don't know exactly what the plans are for Anthony Ciccolo, but Anthony Ciccolo is now, you know, you've got 8 linebackers on the team. And, you know, you got 3 inside guys and you got 5 outside guys. And, you know, obviously they like Ciccolo enough that we assume that somebody tried to sign him off the practice squad at some point last year, and the Steelers didn't want to lose him, so they promoted him to the active roster. So he comes in with the other guys. Ciccolo can't play inside, so you know they're still short an inside linebacker now, right?
Well, now all eyes go back on Jordan Zumwalt, right?
Yeah, you're a good point. Yep.
Because they've obviously Mike Tomlin. There was, I don't know if you saw that post that we had up on Steelers Depot a couple of days ago, but I think it was Mike Mitchell that was telling a story in a radio interview and how cold and how straight to the point Mike Tomlin could be in that locker room. He was walking by Jordan Zumwalt, I think, working out in the locker room, something along those lines. And Mike Tomlin has nicknamed Jordan Zumwalt Money Pit. Because he keeps them around and keeps costing them money to do so. Look, everybody, I think anybody that listens to this podcast knows my thoughts on Jordan Zumwalt. And even at this point, losing guys like Spence and Terrence Garvin, who I weren't overly high on as defensive players, special teams players is a different story. But when it comes to Zumwalt, I will still be shocked, I think, if Zumwalt makes the roster in 2016. People have constantly brought up the name of the other linebacker that they ended the season with last year that got called up from the practice squad. You got to remember, if you go back to the preseason with him, he played outside. You know, and people were trying to classify him. That, of course, I'm drawing a blank here for a moment. L.J. Fort, remember him?
Yep, sure.
If you go back to last preseason, he got snaps as an outside linebacker. And, you know, when he was initially signed by the Steelers, I kind of viewed him more as an inside linebacker. So it's going to be interesting. Now, L.J. Fort, I think, is a solid special teams player. But now, I guess, in light of the Steelers losing Spence and losing Garvin, it puts more focus on guys like Zumwalt and L.J. Fort. And right now, too, this team has to draft an inside linebacker at some point, right?
Yep. And I think now it's now, you know, first 4 rounds. And honestly, If they go in whatever order, corner, safety, D-line, inside linebacker, it's not going to surprise me. If they go defense first 4 rounds, that will not surprise me at all.
Now, let me ask you this. I brought this up a few times on Twitter since free agency started, and I brought it up once today in a post of mine. You got a guy out there that is familiar with the Steelers 3-4 defense, still fairly young, was just recently released by the San Diego Chargers in Donald Butler, an inside linebacker, plays special teams too. Man, perfect opportunity to sign a guy like him on the very, very cheap. And in my opinion, I would do that, and I would still draft an inside linebacker, and I'd create as much competition as I possibly could at the inside linebacker position. Because keep in mind, Vince Williams is entering the final year of his rookie contract, and until the team decides to extend the contract of Lawrence Timmons, he is entering the final year of his contract as well, too. So there, we went from a position that seemingly had good depth to now a position where, yikes.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point. So, you know, it really is interesting that the Steelers, you know, Ryan Harris fits a need here as a swing tackle. So, you know, we're all assuming Mike Adams is done. Maybe he goes to camp. I'm, by the way, I'm not at all surprised that Cortez Allen is still with the team. And we can get into the conversation about the salary cap in a second. The thing that most surprises me in your conversation there, bringing up Donald Butler, is the Steelers have not signed the latest version of Cam Thomas. And obviously Cam Thomas didn't pan out to be what the Steelers hoped he would be. But I'm surprised they have not signed the $2 million a year defensive lineman to be a rotation guy to play 15 snaps a game, that hasn't happened yet. That's the one thing that before the draft, I don't know who the guy is going to be. I don't have a name for you, but I still think that is something that we might see happen.
Well, you remember they showed interest in Jason Jones already.
I don't even know who that is. Who is that?
You do. Played several years for the Tennessee
Titans. Okay, got it.
And most recently played for the Lions. A guy that's an interesting prospect, because if the Steelers did sign him because of his kind of his build and his skill set, he would probably be relegated to a nickel pass rusher that could relieve guys like Tua and Harrison in nickel situations. He's not a guy I don't think that you're going to throw out there as a five tech defensive end in your base defense. He's just not built to do that role. That's why it was a little bit surprising somewhat that they brought him in for a visit. And if you go back to what Kevin Colbert said during the combine or doing the talk with the media just before that, was along the lines that, you know, non-traditional, you know, defensive players, you know, that normally wouldn't have fit the Cedar system are now going to be kind of looked at, you know, because of the landscape of this, you know, pretty much being a nickel defense first kind of thing. So I'm with you. I still think they're going to be kicking a few more tires here moving forward, but they're not going to spend a lot of money on a player like that. And as we've seen year after year, David, if a player comes in for a visit and he leaves without a contract, odds are good that he's not going to wind up signing with the Steelers.
Yeah, exactly. He's done. Okay, so the Kelvin Beachum thing. And now here, this is, you know, it's a fascinating contractual structure, and it looks like not only it looks like his structure and maybe to some degree Okung's structure are a little bit similar. Beachum gets $4.5 million kind of upfront that he's going to make with incentives to get six. But really, what it is, and Dave, you probably know the terms better than I do, so I'll leave it to you. But kind of has a 4-year option with, you know, basically making, if he were to play out his contract, and again, the whole thing about guaranteed money, and everybody who listens to this knows that drill now, but the term on it is $40 million. He's a young enough guy that if he stays in the league and he wins the job, beats out Joakim to be the left tackle, he stands a chance to make, you know, real left tackle, just bona fide big time money.
Yeah, the way to look at both of these deals, talking about Beachum and Okung, are 1-year rental players with the opportunity to land big contracts after the 2016 season. So, you know, that's what they are. And people would ask, well, couldn't the Steelers have done something along the lines with either one of those players? And the short answer would be yes. But the long answer is the Steelers don't like to operate kind of on the if come, you know, type situation. They don't really like to lock themselves into a corner when it comes to contracts that include, you know, non-guaranteed, you know, or questionable years after the first one. So, you know, props to teams like Denver and props to teams like Jacksonville that are willing to do such a thing. But Kelvin Beachum is going to have to really have to play well in 2016 to have that 4-year option picked up. I mean, really, really well.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Yep.
And really, the same goes for Okung, who's coming off of that shoulder surgery. So it helps both those teams in the short term because, like I said, those are really they need to be treated as 1-year rentals initially. I would still expect a team like Denver to address the tackle position in the draft. And when it comes to the to a team like Jacksonville, I would probably do the same thing with them because, look, they obviously signed Kelvin Beachum because they're not totally happy with Luke Jokel, who they spent a first-round draft pick on a few years ago. And on top of that, that right tackle that they gave all that money to, I think it was last offseason, he's going to be – somebody's got to be the odd man out now on that offensive line, and it's probably him. And the problem is they cannot cut him really outright, the right tackle. Is it Parlum or his name. Yeah, something like that. They can't cut him because his base salary is guaranteed,
right.
You know, this year. So it's probably not surprising that Jacksonville went out and signed Beachum to the kind of deal that they did. And at worst, they're out, what, $4.5 to $5 million in 2016 if he isn't able to recover. But at best, if Beachum plays like we know Beachum can probably play, well, then they have a long-term tackle there. So, and it's good for Beachum, too, because it gives him a chance to save his value in 2016 with something already etched in on the other side. And if it doesn't work out, he'll be back a free agent this time next offseason.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I don't, Dave, know that I had seen anything as definitive as what Ray Fittipaldo wrote the other day about the Steelers offering him a long-term deal that he turned down. So, I don't know. I mean, what Ray said was it was less than Pouncey's deal, which is kind of what eight bucks a year, basically. So maybe they offered him somewhere between Gilbert and Pouncey money. doesn't look good right now for him in terms of turning that down. Respect the decision, but these are the interesting decisions that we see guys go through and make. And, you know, you're a guy like Antonio Brown, and you sign that deal that, you know, basically Mike Wallace didn't sign, and you get a lot of money, and you look at it, and you're underpaid here for a bit, and you're hoping to get, you know, the monster deal coming up. You know, I'm sure he's going to be looking for something in the neighborhood of, you know, $12, $13, $14 million a year when his deal comes up again. So Beachum turns it down. He doesn't get it. He gets hurt, and you never know. I mean, this may be it. Like, if he doesn't come back and win the job, he may end up making Ramon Foster type money, which is nothing to scoff at in the big picture of things, but it's certainly not the lifetime guarantee that he was offered this past offseason.
Well, you remember back, I initially had Beecham's market value at like what, $8.5 million.
Yeah, right.
Way back before last season there, and. You just never know how some of your decisions. It's such a risky thing when it comes to these players and playing such a violent game, you know, such as professional football. Because I bet he does wishes he would have taken that contract, assuming that's what it was, or assuming even maybe it was just a little bit more than what Marcus Gilbert had averaged. A year. I think it was obvious that the Steelers weren't going to pay him $10.5 to $11 million a season. So, interesting for sure. And look, I don't hate the guy for gambling and losing and now being out of town.
Yeah.
I mean, Beachum was a fine guy. David, I was thinking back after all that had happened this past weekend. I remember back to watching his preseason games and charting those things, talking about Kelvin Beachum. And he took snaps at both left tackle and left guard during his rookie season, rookie preseason. And, oh, man, he was god-awful. Holding, I think he had something like 5 or 6 holding calls and some false starts in those preseason games. And I can remember writing that an outside chance at making the Steelers practice squad that year. And lo and behold, he made the 53-man roster, and the rest is history. So it just goes to show you that guys like Beachum, who just came into the league just raw as hell, can really buckle down and become good players. And that's exactly what happened to him. And props to Kevin Colbert when we're talking about guys like Beachum, and we're talking about guys like Steve McLennan. We're talking about a 7th-round draft pick and a former undrafted free agent. Do you think Steelers got their mileage out of them?
You're absolutely right. And you know, that is the thing. It also goes to show that being smart helps. I mean, look, you need all the athletic ability in the world to play in the NFL, but being a smart guy helps, and that's what Kelvin Beachum was. He was a smart guy, and you know, hopefully this all works out for him.
Absolutely, but they moved on quickly with Ryan Harris, and you got to respect the Steelers to that. Boy, what a deal that was! 2 years, you can't get better market value there. Now, granted, Ryan Harris is not going to be confused with a Pro Bowl tackle, but 2 years, $3.9 million, and if need be, you can cut him after this year without any issues whatsoever.
Right.
You got a guy that can play both left and right. He's proven that he can. He won a Super Bowl playing left tackle. So props to Kevin Colbert there. We've already talked quite a bit about the Darius Green contract and what the Steelers did there. Now here's the question. Will the Steelers sign any other unrestricted free agents, true unrestricted free agents, between now and June 1st for more than the league minimum?
You know, I'll just go back to what I said earlier, that if they'd signed it, the equivalent of Cam Thomas, that wouldn't surprise me. But I don't see any on offense. I mean, I could see one or two potentially on defense, because, you know, we've talked about all the needs they have. But if they see, you know, can fill a need with a guy who's going to be on the back end of the roster for a couple million bucks, then, you know, I could see it happening. I don't see it offensively, though.
What would you have told me 2 weeks ago if I told you, David, I want you to take 100 of your pennies out of your penny bank and put them all down on Antoine Blake, Sean Spence, and Terrence Garvin all signing a free agent contract before Brandon Boykin?
Yeah, I'm surprised. I have to say I'm surprised that Boykin's not anywhere yet. And I don't know if that means, you know, that he's looking for $5 million a year and that, you know, there are people out there willing to pay it, but I'm definitely surprised.
I am too. It just goes to show you sometimes, man. You think you might know the market value or supply and demand on some of these positions, and then you don't. I mean, outside of maybe that first night or two, Atlanta Falcons maybe having some potential interest in Brandon Boykin, I haven't heard anything. And I don't think he's made a free agent trip yet to visit any of these teams. Now, I don't know if you read I transcribed an interview that Brandon Boykin did just prior to the start of free agency. And, you know, he said Mike Tomlin kind of left the door open to him, but at the same time, he told Boykin during his exit interview that he would be foolish not to test free agency. And then if he gets out there and if he doesn't like what he sees, you know, to give him a phone call. So, you know, at what point, you know, And Boykin didn't seem to be the happiest during that interview either. He kept talking about how he thought playing time played a or stipulations of that trade played a big role in his lack of playing time. But I mean, if you do the math, and Lord knows Alex and I certainly have all season long, they could have played him a lot earlier and still not been run the risk of him coming close to meeting that percentage of threshold of snaps that would have, you know, resulted in in the Eagles getting a higher round draft pick there. So
I got to say, if you're going to question one thing about what the Steelers did personnel wise this season, that's a very justifiable one.
Sure, and fans have had a field day with it, and they're having even more of a field day with it now that Blake has signed with Tennessee and Boykin's still out there, but you know we'll never know.
I see if he gets $4 million a year, $5 million a year, or $2 million a year.
Have you talked to Craig Wolfley lately?
I've not.
Next time you see him, because I think him and Tunch were talking about Boykin, recently, and I didn't hear this. This is all kind of secondhand, but saying that. You know, he never really performed well in practice with the Steelers for most of the year and lining up in the wrong places and falling down and slipping a lot. Like I said, that's I don't want to put that out there like it's gospel, and maybe some of our listeners have heard that. I haven't heard that, but why don't you sometime talk to next time you talk to Wolfley or Tunch, ask him about that.
Yeah.
And maybe that will shed a little bit of light, because I mean it's quite honest. It was quite confusing there for a while that as bad as Antoine Blake was playing, why Cockrell just didn't play all the snaps outside and Boykin be used in the slot. What would you do now? Would you kick the tires on a guy like Patrick Robinson right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I mean I'm willing to talk to everybody. I mean look, I mean I'm willing to talk to Boykin. I mean look, ideally. You know, if things break exactly how the Steelers would like them to break, whoever they draft as a corner, let's say he can step in and start, and you cross your fingers that Senquez Golson can start, and, you know, ideally William Gay's your nickel corner, and Cockrell's your fourth corner, or you know, whatever. You know, that would be an ideal world. I don't know, it's unlikely that that's how it's going to go. I mean, it's going to be most likely Gay. I would guess it's going to be Gay and Golson on the outside. You know, maybe ideally Cortez Allen comes back and has a great, you know, a great training camp and wins a job. And you go Cortez Allen, Senquez Golson, and William Gay as your three corners with Cockrell and whoever you draft as your fourth and fifth corners. That would be ideal. I mean, you'd love to have Cortez Allen step up, but I don't think anybody's banking on that happening. So, you know, do you bring again? We're just exactly what you said. Vet minimum to $2 million. Yeah, I'll talk to anybody, but probably not more than that. And you know that obviously then excludes Golson, excludes Boykin, because I think he's going to get more than that.
You know, people sometimes think we defend, the organization a little bit too much. But here's one thing: what did Art Rooney say immediately after the season ended, and what the plan for the offseason was?
Get better. Get better.
Get better where?
In secondary.
Pass defense.
Yeah.
Now, pass defense, pass defense, that's a loose term, right? Because that, in my opinion, pass defense means we got to get after the quarterback better, and we got to do a better job of covering on the back end. So to me, that's twofold, okay? With that said, what have the Steelers done to address that?
So
far this offseason. Now, look, some might say that they've gotten better by letting Blake.
Addition by subtraction.
Yeah, addition by subtraction. And look, Antoine Blake, bless his heart. I mean, he played through injury, a very physical guy. We don't know how much that impacted his play. But the fact is he wasn't healthy at times last year, and because of that, he shouldn't have been on the field anyways. But best of luck to him now that he's off to Dick LeBeau in Tennessee. But, man, I would seriously look at a guy like Patrick Robinson, for at maybe at most $1.75 million a season, somewhere around in there. Because I think he can play for you. Because right now you've got a lot of gambling eggs in another year older William Gay, a questionable player still in Ross Cockrell, a guy you're hoping finds some sort of form in Cortez Allen, and a guy you haven't even seen on the field yet in Senquez Golson,
yep,
who is undersized.
Yep.
So, needless to say, and then look, let's not forget about Duran Grant, who we don't even know what position he's going to play next year.
Yeah, he is a complete wild card. I mean, you know, it tells you one thing. It tells you something about – we've got two data points on Chickalo. One was they cut him. They cut him in when camp opened or when camp closed. He didn't make the original 53, and they had cut him to get to the practice squad. And then they thought enough of him that we assume that, even though Tomlin would never confirm this to me, that somebody offered him and they brought him to the 53. So you've got two data points there. Doran Grant, I don't know what you think. It's kind of the same, a bit of the same type of thing. They cut him as well, and then he ends the season back on the 53-man roster. But, you know, I think he played one snap all season long, and you know, don't know what to make of him at all. You know, we don't have any view. I don't have any view of him.
how can we?
Yeah.
You know, a limited amount of playing time during the preseason. One defensive snap in 2015 after being promoted from the practice squad. And then, you know, all along, if you go back to when 5 minutes after Grant was selected, Carnell Lake admitting that a possible move to safety down the line. And then last year during the season, even though he wasn't seeing snaps, you had both Keith Butler and I can't remember if it was Tomlin or Carnell Lake, again kind of saying that safety's not out of the question for Grant. So, you want to talk about a wild card? Yes, we don't know a thing about him. If any of you out there try to tell us that you do, you're lying, because all we have is Ohio State tape to go on right now, to be quite honest with you. So, you asked the other day, I think when I was on your radio show, slam dunk that the Steelers draft a safety and a corner within the first three picks. And I said, I think I said something along the lines of, man, ain't nothing a slam dunk when it comes to this team and draft picks and needs and all like that. I will go this far, and I'm not sure, maybe we'll get to this to close up to this segment. In my latest mock draft, I do have them taking a safety and a corner, albeit in the first four picks and not the first three.
Yeah. I'm good with that. Like I said, there are four, you know, go four times on defense to start it and get a linebacker and get a defensive lineman and get two guys in the secondary. Or two defensive linemen. I don't really care how they do it. I can't see a spot where you want to draft. I mean, look, we and I haven't gone into the Martavis Bryant thing, but I'd say it's a straight 50% that he ever plays a snap for the Steelers, maybe in the NFL again. I mean, we saw Josh Gordon. I haven't read all the details, but we saw Josh Gordon did not get reinstated this year, which is really, I mean.
No, that was a fake account.
Oh, Mary Kay Cabot was a fake account.
Yeah, that was Uncle, I forget the guy's name, but he's built up quite a following of duping Uncle Chaps. He's made a Twitter career out of impersonating other accounts.
All right, so we don't know the answer to Josh Gordon then. Well, I hope he's back in the league. But I mean, I don't know if you guys talked about this on Monday. Would you put it at better or worse that 50% that Martavis ever plays a snap for the Steelers?
I think you're right on the money.
Yeah.
You can't bank on it, right?
No, you cannot bank on it. And so the longer point I was trying to make here is, you know, I don't know, you know, Eli Rogers comes back and contends for a return spot. There is an open roster spot for a wide receiver. I don't know that the Steelers will use a seventh round pick on a wide receiver, but it wouldn't shock me, put it that way. But if you're going to, you know, seventh round picks, I'd still rather see him gamble on a guy on the defensive side of the ball than a wide receiver. But potentially, you know, they're going to have to go wide receiver again here in the 2017 draft. And so if they go in the back of the 2016 draft with the success that they've had, what do? You say, okay, great, you've had success.
Talking about wide receiver, you go from a situation where you think, man, that things are looking pretty good
this
year, right?
Exactly.
right now. And now you go to a situation, well, is Martavis Bryant ever going to play another down for the Steelers? We know he's not in 2016. So we have seen the last – here's something to think about. We have seen the last time that Marcus Wheaton and Martavis Bryant on the field together.
Yep, never see that again.
Think about that.
I cannot imagine there's any scenario where Marcus Wheaton comes back unless it's kind of like – there's just no market for him, and he's, you know, we see the money that Sanu and the kid from Cal, what Marvin Jones got. I mean, when you're talking about $8 and $7 million for, you know, clearly number two receivers, not bad receivers. I like both guys, but you know, that's the upside of what Marcus Wheaton could be, and you know, he can get $5 million in that. You know, he's going to go to the Patriots for, you know, $5 million. So that's what's going to happen. And the Steelers aren't paying that.
Right. And then you look at the rest. I mean, yes, they re-signed Darius Hayward Bay. God bless him. But how many more years does Darius – the odds of Darius Hayward Bay playing out that three-year contract are not good at all.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good to get 2 years out of him because he's still in great shape. and he works hard, and he's a character guy. So I can see getting 2 years out of him. You're going to obviously going to get Sammy Coates. You're going to have to redo Antonio, so you're going to pay up for that. And, you know, you're going to be going back, you know, you're going to be going back into the draft in the early rounds in 2017 for a receiver.
If you don't, and the only reason I'm bringing this up now is, how many times have the Steelers not drafted a wide receiver?
Yeah, not many.
Over the course of what, since Tomlin came to town, what, one or two times, if that? I forget the exact number. And here's something else to consider. Now, when you look at, I think Alex has already done a study on this, and one was sent to me the other day by a analytics company of all things, when they kind of look back at what the Steelers have drafted as it relates to measurables and everything like that. I'm trying to pull this up right now. Here it is, David. Based on what Steelers have gotten in the past and combine pro day numbers, only 5 wide receivers really fit the bill for the Steelers this year. Would you like to try to guess 2 or 3 of them?
To say it again for me one more time.
When you look at combine or/slash pro day numbers,
yeah,
from this year's wide receiver class,
yeah,
an analytics company. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking a real analytics company, not some stupid blogger like me sitting in his basement playing with the numbers. Sent me a list of 5 names in this year's wide receiver class that fit everything the Steelers look for as far as analytics go. You want to try to guess a few of those wide receivers?
I guess Corey Coleman and Tyler Boyd. That's all I got.
Corey Coleman from Baylor is one of them. Tyler Boyd is another one.
That's pretty good. I quit while I'm ahead. Yale won yesterday. I got 2 out of 2. I'm done.
Yeah, take your blindfold off. Yeah. Here are the other 3. Laquan Treadwell,
yep,
from Mississippi. Josh Doctson out of TCU.
Yeah, and those are, you know, we've named 3 of the top, you know, guys on Mayock's top 5 list of receivers here.
Right, so we're not breaking news is what you're saying.
Yep.
But the other one, Will Fuller out of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
So those are the 5. Now, while the Steelers were at the pro day, at the Baylor pro day the other day, Todd Haley was there. So and they apparently talked to Corey Coleman.
Well, Tyler Boyd's going to be on the board in the second round, I think. I think that's about where he's going to go. I think because Corey Coleman just absolutely smoked his 40 on the pro day, I think he may end up now being, you know, a first round pick. I think Treadwell goes in the first round. Doctson maybe goes in the first round. Fuller goes in the early second, late first, early second, and then it's open season. But I think Boyd would be on the board for the Steelers in the second round if they wanted to go there.
True or false? The Steelers will draft 1 wide receiver this year.
Well, you talk me into it. Yes.
Hey, don't let me talk you into it, because I wasn't on board for doing that until Martavis.
5 minutes ago.
No, until Martavis Bryant got suspended.
Right. Of course, there was no chance. I couldn't imagine it without that. But you know,
that's how quickly us so called smart people can change our minds, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we go from there's no way this team's going to draft a wide receiver after re-signing Darius Hayward Bay. And now all of a sudden, here we are. Man, I wonder if one of these top 5 wide receivers the Steelers will have interest in. Let's close out by running through my mock draft real quick, David. And once again, I'm not going to be breaking new ground here, but I do have a surprise in here, and I kind of want your thoughts on the overall thing. Andrew Billings, I mean, how can that not be the first guy right now for me in my latest mock draft coming off of what just happened in Baylor the other day? Round 2. Keanu Neal, the safety,
yep,
out of Florida.
Yep.
Is he a round 2 guy? Is he a round 3 guy? Is he a round 4 guy? You know, that's what the talk is. He fit in good in my second round. Physical guy, can play both safety positions. Tomlin likes those SEC guys, real physical player, yada, yada. All right, here's one. The Steelers have sure shown a lot of interest to quarterbacks so far during the pre-draft process. So I aggravated a lot of my – readers by putting in Dak Prescott as the round three pick. But look, prior to him getting the DUI last week, they have been all over him. They talked to him at the combine. Randy Fittner showed up at the Mississippi State Pro Day. So there's some reason to believe, David, that the Steelers are going to draft a quarterback at some time this year. Now, the round three or round four, who knows? But I decided to throw that in there. You talk about this team needing a cornerback. I waited till round four. DeAndre Elliott, lengthy, 6 foot and almost 6 foot one, 188 pounds out of Colorado State. The Steelers showed interest in him recently, probably going to bring him in for a pre-draft visit. One guy on Steelers' defensive staff that knows DeAndre Elliott pretty good is Joey Porter, because remember, he was a graduate assistant coach there. Round six, I gave the Steelers a wide receiver, Malcolm Mitchell, out of Georgia, 5'11" and 5'8", developmental kind of guy, kind of reminds you of maybe a poor man's Marcus Wheaton, right around in there. Round seven, inside linebacker out of Clemson, a one-year starter, was the captain of that defense there, led Clemson in tackles. B.J. Goodson, keep your eye on him. He really fits what the Steelers like, and I think you could get him around six or round seven. And then the last pick of round seven, I have circled Joe Heath, a defensive end. He would fit as a five-tech defensive end out of Michigan State. So there you go. That's my mock. Thoughts?
I like it. You know, obviously the Dak Prescott thing is the talking point. The DUI, I don't know if that'll impact the Steelers at all in terms of how they look at things. And again, we talk about this, and we were plenty critical of the Landry Jones draft, that pick, and that turned out to be a bit of a surprise, positive thing for the Steelers finally this year. Not one you're looking for it to be positive, but it was. I can't remember who I was reading, whether it was Belichick or Gil Brandt or somebody else, saying, you should draft a quarterback every other year. And obviously Kevin subscribes to the fact that, they're going to carry three quarterbacks, and you need to constantly be looking at what is the most important position in the game. So we would be silly to discount the idea that they will do it. Would I do it? No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do it this year, but they very well may.
Here's my opening sentence of that selection. I'll admit that I do not enjoy mocking a quarterback to the Steelers this year, but the team certainly appears headed that direction. So, I would expect me to have a quarterback somewhere in my mocks from here on out. Will I put one up as high as three? Now, I admit that was a little bit of a dart throw when you talked to Prescott, but I kind of wanted to see what I could put together as far as a mock by putting them in there. And, it's hard to deny the fact that they've had interest in him. And since he has had this DUI now, it'll be interesting to see if they bring him in for a pre-draft visit. So, oh, boy, a lot to cover. A lot happened this week,
yeah,
David.
Yeah, you think things are slow. We didn't even touch on the other. We'll do that on Monday. We'll touch on what's been going on around the league. We didn't even begin to sniff on that.
Yeah, we'll talk about the proposed rule changes that they'll be going over at the owner at the annual meetings. In where are they this year? Do you remember? I forget where they are. I don't know if they're in Arizona or what. I'll have to look that up. But, we'll have plenty to talk about at the start of next week. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, we do it two times a week during the off season and three times during the regular season. You can donate. There's a donate button on SteelersDepot.com. It's easy to find in the navigational bar. David, you're going to be watching some basketball.
Yeah, root for the blue and white. Oh, wait, they're both blue and white. All right, well, root for the Bulldogs. Go Yale. And thanks for listening.
Go Nerds.
Yeah, right. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.